that's half the battle, right?
Yeah, there. But I tell you, it was a great. I thought it was a great presentation.
About 30 seconds.
Okay.
It was a great. So many things you don't even think about.
Yeah.
Right now,
yeah. Yeah.
All right, good morning. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, September 19th, 2017, and ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with pledge of allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, thank you again. Good morning. Board, a couple moves I'd like to make on the agenda with your approval, and that is to pull all our public hearing items up ahead of our report from the ADC. We have multiple people on multiple issues, and let them get on with their day. And then the other thing, as has been our practice with our system for appointing boards and commissions, as soon as we have Mr. Youngberg get here, we'll try to work him into the agenda as quickly as possible, because he's not sitting. So, if you guys are okay with that,
we'll
pull public hearing items up after the proclamation for National Voter Registration Month, which we're going to get to here in just a minute. But first, as always, is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda, not on today's agenda. Only thing I would ask is if you're here for a specific public hearing item, let's wait and have you address it at the time we get to that. If there's anybody else who'd like to speak to anything, now's your opportunity. Come right on up. And seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll move on to Proclamation of September 2017 as National Voter Registration Month, and specifically September 26, 2017 as National Voter Registration Day. Lucy Martin. Is Lucy? Yep.
Yep.
Lucy, you want to read this in? You want me to read it in?
You can read it in.
All right, National Voter Registration Month, official proclamation. Whereas, registering to vote empowers eligible citizens to exercise their right to vote on Election Day, and whereas, while Iowa is one of the nation's leaders in voter registration and voter participation, with more than 2 million residents currently registered to vote, some eligible citizens have not yet registered, and whereas, the voter registration process in Iowa is readily available, with applications available through government agencies across the state, and whereas the state of Iowa has an online voter registration system enabling citizens with an Iowa driver's license or non-operator identification cards to register to vote and update their registration status quickly and easily any time of day, and whereas the need for public information and education regarding voter registration is crucial as Iowa voters prepare to take part in the 2017 city elections, and whereas we encourage all interested citizens and all appropriate, did I go over time? And all appropriate media outlets and civic organizations to participate in this nonpartisan voter registration awareness campaign to encourage the maximum participation of qualified voters in Iowa. Now, therefore, we, the Board of Supervisors of Story County, do hereby proclaim September 2017 as National Voter Registration Month, and September 26, 2017, as National Voter Registration Day. Lucy.
Just some follow-up comments. Thank you. Every day is National Voter Registration Day in the Auditor's Office, of course. But some people know that Friday, October 27th at 5 p.m. is the deadline to be registered for the city election if you live in any city in Iowa or in Story County. And that also, even if you update your registration through the online system, those dates still apply. Also, I'd like to recognize that the League of Women Voters for Story County is here, and they're also on Tuesday, next Tuesday, September 26th, they will be at the Ames Public Library in Hy-Vee East from 10 to 3 to participate in National Voter Registration Day and registering people. Forms are available on our website, in our office, and also driver's license. So please, if you ever move or change your address, please update your voter registration at the same time.
Thanks, Lucy. It's important and it matters. Hope everybody here is a regular voter. If you're not, you should be. Anything to add, Board? Or if not, I would take a motion.
Go ahead, Lawrence.
I was so moved that we accept the proclamation as read. Thank you.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. September 2017 is National Voter Registration Month in Story County, and September 26, 2017 is National Voter Registration Day, so be sure that you enjoy yourselves on that festive occasion. Now we're moving to public hearing items. And our first public hearing item is consideration of Resolution 1832, which is approving a loan agreement of $1.5 million of urban renewal tax increment revenue bond and pledging payment of the bonds from the valuation, basically in our wind towers, but a few other places here in Story County. Leanne Harper.
Good morning.
Morning, Leanne.
I have a backup crew in the room that if I have questions I will lean on heavily. This is follow-up to the action of the board from a couple weeks ago. I just have a repeat, essentially, of the slideshow I did show then, but for the benefit of the board and those present today, I'd like to repeat it. This is related to phase two of the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor construction, which is the conservation piece as part of the Iowa State University Research Park. Amendments to the urban renewal plan for that specific project were processed from late May through ultimately adoption in July of this year. And then the financing piece followed that, and the board did indeed instruct staff proceed with a tax increment revenue loan agreement. That is a mouthful. In early August, the treasurer in a tweet put this out for bids to lending institutions from the 24th of August through September 5th. Those were then presented to the board and received by the board. And then we get on September 5th, we received two Exchange State Bank from Ames at 2.65% annually. And then Great Western Bank, again in Ames, 3.18% annually. It is a 10-year schedule, and so the resolution that's drafted before you has blanks for you to have the discussion today on which of the two institutions you intend to go, and then staff will amend the resolution accordingly and go forward. With that, that is your action today. Do I need to add anything else from the assistants in the audience? Okay. Are there any questions?
Questions for Leanne?
None.
Then we'll open it up and open up the public hearing portion of this item and ask if there's anyone who would like to address Resolution 1832. Seeing no one move the microphone, we will close the public hearing, turn to the board for action.
I would move that we go with Exchange State Bank for the 2.65% per annum rate.
And approval of resolution.
And approval of resolution.
1832.
Thank you. 1832. It's a group effort sometimes.
I would second that.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Exchange State Bank is the approved vendor, and Resolution 1832 passes. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, ma'am.
Next public hearing item is first consideration of Ordinance 263, amending certain boundaries of the official zoning map of Story County, and for Resolution 1835, the proposed Dayton Park Major Subdivision Preliminary Plat. This is the Gibbons rezoning. Emily and Jared, good morning.
Okay. This is a request for both a rezoning and a major subdivision preliminary plat. The applicant is Jeff Gibbons of 2272 Dayton Parkway, northeast of Ames. The property is located in Section 24 of Franklin Township and located, again, just northeast of Ames. So the nature of the request is a rezoning from the A1 Agricultural District to the R1 Transitional Residential District. They're also requesting a major preliminary subdivision plat to divide the existing about 10 to 11 acre parcel into four lots, and those range from 1.04 acres to 6.8 acres for three additional single family dwellings. All lots in this proposed subdivision would take access off of a proposed private street that would be located approximately 30 feet south of Dayton Parkway, which is a private driveway off of Dayton Avenue, 300. Sorry, yes. The street is located approximately 300 feet south of Dayton Parkway, which is a private driveway. Okay. So here we are on the very eastern edge of Franklin Township, about just under 2 miles northeast of the city of Ames and 3 miles southeast of the city of Gilbert. The zoning of this property is A1. There is some AR zoning to the north of the property. Three parcels to the west, these two R1 parcels as well as parcel C, were rezoned from A1 to R1 in 1976. The parcel C on the very western edge there was rezoned back to A1 in 1994 to accommodate livestock. This is the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, the land use framework map designations. This property is located within the Rural Service and Agricultural Conservation area. It is designated specifically rural residential and natural area. There is some agriculture and subsurface mining to the south, and then agriculture and farm service as well to the south. A couple key policies from the rural residential designation of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. This designation includes all single-family residential land uses and developments that involve a maximum average net density of one unit per acre. This designation encourages clustering of residential sites to limit the short and long-term costs associated with infrastructure improvements. This designation looks to limit the rural residential development on prime agricultural land. So the utility providers and related service providers of this property are Alliant Energy, Xenia Rural Water, the Gilbert Fire Department, and then Mary Greeley Ambulance. We have received letters from Alliant, Xenia, and Gilbert Fire letting us know that they are able and willing to serve this development. So looking at the surrounding land use, the subject property in this image is to the south here. We can see the many additions of country estate subdivisions to the north, and then also the Tullamore Glen subdivision approximately half mile northeast of the subject property. Zooming in just a little bit, again, country estates to the north, and then we also have to the northeast Hickory Grove Mobile Home Park, which has approximately 35 homes located there. Within a quarter mile of the subject property, there are 21 single-family dwellings. Here we're looking at Dayton Avenue here, 190th here, and then Dayton Parkway, which extends west from Dayton Avenue. There are five single-family dwellings that have access off of Dayton Parkway. Again, that's a private driveway. You can see kind of the progression of building. 1976, the property to the north was, the single-family dwelling to the north was built. The subject property, the single-family dwelling on the subject property was built in 1978, and development moved westward from there. So a little bit of background on the subject property. This is historically an outdoor recreation area called Dayton Park. This was established in 1916 for boating, bathing, cabins, dance hall, and so on, other amenities. The last use of this property was around 1950. The property owner has found many artifacts from this time period, including the existing remains of a 100 by 40 foot swimming pool. Again, the existing dwelling on the property was built in 1978.
Where, by the way, it is, I don't know if this is rumored or factual, that the gentleman who played Superman in the TV show in the 50s came and did a diving exhibition at that swimming pool. And the other thing I'll say is the interesting history of Dayton Park. I believe when it talks about the other amenities in addition to boating and the cabins and the dance hall, you will notice that his heyday was during Prohibition, and I think that some of our area residents may have been partaking of libations while they were out visiting Dayton Lake.
I thought it was the ice cream parlor.
It was what they were topping their ice cream with.
Okay, so the proposed subdivision would be dividing the existing parcel into four lots, again, for three additional single-family dwellings. Proposed lot one would be 1.5 acres, and that would be to the northeast of the existing single-family dwelling. Proposed lot two would be 1.17 acres, and that would be to the southeast of the existing single-family dwelling. Proposed lot three would be just over an acre and southeast, also southeast of the existing family dwelling. And then proposed lot four would be 6.8 acres and contain the single-family dwelling and the area to the west. And we'll look a little bit more closely here. I would just like to point out here that initially when the applicant came to conceptual review with this proposed subdivision, they were proposing seven single-family lots, all with access off of this private driveway here. That does not conform to our standards. That's not something that could be permitted. So the applicant went back to the drawing board and proposed what you have in front of you today. So here's the existing single-family dwelling. There and accessory structures. This would be proposed lot four, 6.8 acres. Proposed lot one, again, to the northeast of the single-family dwelling. Lot two here, and then proposed lot three. This is the location on the 40 by 100 foot swimming pool, and I do have a picture of the remains of that coming up, but that's the location of the swimming pool. I will point out the private street that's being proposed here, as well as the different shape of proposed lot three was chosen to follow the topography lines of the land. So if you have any, that's the reason for the shape of lot three. Here, the applicant has added to the plat potential rain garden locations on each of the proposed lots in green, and then also proposed rock check dams to be located in the existing culvert area. Here's a pictometry image of the site. Most of the development would be taking place here. You can see the remnants of the swimming pool here. And here's some site photos. This is looking west toward the existing dwelling on proposed lot four. And this is, the existing dwelling and accessory structures. Here's looking south toward proposed lot three, just to the southeast there of the single-family dwelling, and looking south toward proposed lot two. Here's looking east toward Dayton Avenue along the proposed private street, so the access from Dayton would be located here. This is the conservation area on the east side of Dayton Avenue, directly across from the proposed subdivision. This is looking northeast at proposed lot one, Dayton Parkway, the private driveway is located here, and then Dayton Avenue would be here. Here's looking northeast from Dayton Parkway across Dayton Avenue toward 190th Street, also Hickory Grove Mobile Home Park. Again, there are about 35 homes located in that mobile home park. This is looking north along Dayton Avenue from the proposed street, private street, and toward the intersection of 190th Street. This is looking south from the proposed private street along Dayton Avenue. This is looking southwest at the western portion of proposed Lot 4. This area was originally designated as an outlot. We did ask the applicant to combine this with proposed Lot 4, and that was done for us. This is looking southwest at the western portion of Lot 4. The applicant did provide us, following the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting on September 6th, some updated site photos of some cleanup work he did in this area. So those will be following here. This is an image submitted by the applicant on September 11th of this year, showing the cleanup of the area on proposed Lot 4. This is looking southwest from Dayton Parkway at a portion of the western area on proposed Lot 4. Again, the applicant provided us with a site photo of the cleaned up area on September 11th. This is looking south on Lot 4 toward the natural area located down by the stream there. Again, the natural area to the south. This is looking northwest to the property on the north side of Dayton Parkway. And then looking northeast to the property to another property on the north side of Dayton Parkway. And then this is looking east along Dayton Parkway toward Dayton Avenue, which would be located right here. It's hard to see. This is the accessory structure on the subject property and then the property to the north here. So looking at the standards for approval for rezonings, the proposed rezoning shall conform to the Story County Development Plan, which is our C2C plan, and that references the Ames Urban Fringe plan for the 2-mile buffer around the city of Ames. A couple policies for this area. Again, single-family residential uses, clustering of residential sites, and then limiting development on primary agricultural land. The second standard is that the rezoning shall conform to the statement of intent for the proposed district. The proposed lots meet all of the bulk requirements of the R1 transitional residential district, and we believe it's consistent with nearby residential lots. The third standard is that the rezoning should be compatible with surrounding land uses and development patterns. This property is immediately adjacent to properties zoned R1, Transitional Residential District, to the west. Country Estate Subdivision, which is zoned AR, is located to the north. And then the Tullamore Glen Subdivision, which is zoned R1, is about a half mile to the northeast of the subject property. Also, again, located to the northeast, across that intersection, is the Hickory Grove Mobile Home Park. The fourth standard is that to protect environmental resources, the natural area designation of this property is really located on the southern one-third of the subject property. The development will be discouraged in this area, but there appears to be plenty of space outside of the designated natural area to construct single-family dwellings on each lot, or one single-family dwelling on each lot. Lot 3 may be the exception to this rule. However, there is that existing abandoned swimming pool structure, which is due to the configuration of the lot, probably most likely where the house would be built anyway. This is the abandoned swimming pool structure. This photo was provided to us by the applicant. The fifth standard of approval for rezoning is that when you're rezoning from the A1 or A2 districts, the land evaluation site assessment, or LISA score, must be less than 267. The LISA score calculated for this property is below that threshold at 177, and therefore meets the this requirement for rezoning. Looking at the subdivision regulations, subdivisions that can't be submitted as an agricultural or minor subdivision plat shall be considered a major plat. This subdivision, although it only has four proposed lots, is proposing a private road and therefore must be submitted as a major subdivision. Again, this needs to adhere to all of our ordinances, and the major subdivision plats do go through the preliminary plat review, so that's what you're looking at today. If it is approved and improvements are made to this, and all improvements are made to the site, the applicant will come back at that point for your review of the final plat. We did get some information about the traffic and accident counts for this intersection. This was a topic of concern brought up at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. As you can see, starting in 1999, the traffic count, the average annual daily traffic counts on Dayton Avenue have actually decreased a little bit. They increased in 2007 and then have dropped back down. Along 190th Street, which connects to I-35, annual average daily traffic counts have increased over the past several years. We did request accident information from the sheriff's office for the past 3 years, and this data is for at or near the intersection of Dayton Avenue or 190th Street. There were a total of 5 accidents reported in the last 3 years, so since 2014, 4 of which did not involve an injury and 1 that did. So some comments from the interagency review team. Because the subdivision has more lots, environmental health noted that they will need to hire a soils professional, which is standard with our major subdivisions. A permit from the engineer's office will be required to build the new street, but the location was approved by the Story County engineer. The assessor's office had comments about assessment. I won't go into that. We can talk about that if you have specific questions. Planning and development, we asked that Outlot X be combined with Lot 4. That's what they chose to do. They chose to go ahead and do that. Our land development regulations permits a maximum removal of 15% of natural vegetative cover. There were concerns from the public about trees being removed from this property. But the applicant has indicated that he has planted over 70 trees on the property prior to the submittal of the subdivision plat. We asked for Iowa stormwater management, best management practices, and erosion control, sediment control practices, statements on those. The engineer has added notes to the plat, as well as those locations of possible rain gardens and the proposed check dams onto the plat. We did receive some calls, or a call with questions about junk in the western portion of proposed Lot 4, and a comment about a possible sawmill business in the back there. The applicant met with planning staff following that phone call and discussed how an arborist had provided information and recommendation on proper protection of the oaks and larger trees on the properties. This did result in removing some of the tree species that and other dead trees. But the applicant did, again, plant 70 trees on the property. The applicant also indicated he was not running a sawmill business. This is a hobby for him. And he did, however, submit a home occupation permit for the financial planning business that he currently runs out of one of the accessory structures on his property. This was approved by the Planning and Development Department. Comments from the public. Notice letters were sent to property owners within a quarter mile of the proposed subdivision prior to the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. We also published a notice of public hearing in the county's designated newspapers on August 31st prior to the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. Materials were routed to the City of Ames and Gilbert. The City of Ames and Gilbert didn't express any concerns, although Ames planning staff did inquire about the preservation of the natural area. Planning and development staff did receive several phone calls with general inquiries about the proposed development, as well as four emails with concerns regarding the proposals. These were forwarded to the Planning and Zoning Commission members. Several members of the public spoke at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. Issues included removal of trees, noise from the sawmill, other equipment located on the property, truck traffic on the private driveway, storage of materials, and then concerns regarding the proposed subdivision not being compatible with the neighborhood and the addition of the road near to the private driveway. Again, we sent notice letters again prior to this meeting, and we also published a notice of public hearing in the county's designated newspapers on September 14th. So, Story County Planning and Development staff support the proposed rezoning from the A1 district to the R1 Transitional Residential District based on the following. The subject property is immediately adjacent to two parcels with single-family dwellings that are zoned R1, located directly to the west. The R1 Transitional Residential District conforms to the Ames Urban Fringe Rural Residential designation. The proposed use conforms to the statement of intent and the regulations of the R1 Transitional Residential District, and the proposed use will conform to surrounding land use and development patterns. In terms of the subdivision, Planning and Development staff also recommend approval of the proposed Dayton Park subdivision preliminary plat. This will create four lots for three additional single-family dwellings, all to be located to the east of the existing single-family dwelling. The proposed subdivision meets Story County land development requirements for major subdivision plats. The natural area to the south and west portions of the property will be preserved. All lots will have frontage on the proposed private road, and the current driveway access off of Dayton Parkway to the existing single-family dwelling will be removed, and again, all proposed lots will take access off the proposed private road. At their September 6th Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended to the Board of Supervisors their recommendation was a split vote, 3-3, on the motion to approve the rezoning request, and a recommendation of denial with a vote of 5-1 for the proposed major subdivision preliminary plat. The reasons stated for the motion to deny the subdivision were that although the rezoning request was appropriate for the proposed plat, this proposal was not consistent with the type of uses currently in the area. Also, there were questions regarding what has happened on the subject property prior to the submittal of the plat. So those are the reasons stated for recommendation of denial for the subdivision.
Okay.
Okay. The applicant, since the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting on the 6th, the applicant has made efforts to clean up the western portion of his property. The applicant has provided photos, which we looked at previously, of the recently cleaned up area to Planning and Development staff. This cleanup included the removal of the pergola, the sawmill, and the wood, wood kiln, as well as the relocation of the telephone poles. So we do need two separate motions from you today, one on the rezoning request and then one on the subdivision request. So I have both of those here. Any questions before we look at those specifically?
Absolutely. First of all, really good job. Pretty thorough. Appreciate the work you put in. So a couple questions that I have of you guys, and then I think I'm going to have the same questions of the applicant or the applicant's representative. So just help me, since we have what appears to be a disagreement between staff and Planning and Zoning Commission, talk to me about the factors used in determining whether this is a consistent use, how we determine. You mentioned earlier that, you know, we want an average lot size of more than an acre or more. How is that determined? How is this, from your perspective, a consistent use?
Everything really starts with a comprehensive plan, C2C plan. The C2C plan references the Ames Urban Fringe plan, so that's really our guiding document for trying to figure out if this proposed use fits in with the area. And again, the rural residential designation indicates that it permits a maximum average net density of one unit per acre. It's a 10-acre parcel. Typically, he could be permitted more than the number of lots that he's requesting. But when you take into account the road and the preservation of the natural resource areas, that's going to be less than the one unit per acre. So that's what everything starts with. And then we have zoning ordinance requirements. And we are to look at the surrounding land uses. It doesn't say adjacent land uses. Just along Dayton Parkway, you've got a mix of existing lots ranging from 1.7 acres up to 12 acres. If you look to the north in the Country Estates subdivision on the southern end, you've got lots that are around an acre and a half. They increase in size. To the northeast of this, you have Hickory Grove Mobile Home Park, which has 30-some mobile home units on 10 acres. See, we're taking that into consideration. And then further to the north, approximately a half mile, the Tullamore Glen subdivision, that's zoned R1, which is what they're requesting. Those are half-acre lots. And then the development to the east of that on the east side of the road are half-acre lots. So we take all that into consideration when we're making recommendations.
Okay, so for me, that takes care of the why staff deems this a consistent, appropriate use, and maybe planning and zoning, I think in a split vote, didn't necessarily see it that way. The second portion or the second concern that I saw there, Jerry, was things that had happened before this request was made on the property, and I think more specifically on the western part of the property and what was going to happen with the western part of the property. Talk me through all that. So what we've got here is, Emily, I think you said the original request was 7 lots, which would have included buildable lots on the western part of this property. And I think you guys at that point recommended, no, that's not something that is really passable. So what's wrong with the western end? There's an easement, as I read this, along the existing Dayton Parkway, which impacts the western end. So things can't be built back there under our current regulations, as I understand it. Verify that for me. Talk to me about the kind of things that happened back there prior to this request and what, if any, impact that has on this request.
Right. There are a lot of comments from the neighbors and questions from the Planning and Zoning Commission with regard to cutting of trees. Information that we received from the applicant is that he was removing some of the trees that had fallen over or that were dead or that were dying. But also, as Emily mentioned, he had hired an arborist because he wanted advice on how to protect certain species, the taller, the stronger trees, the oaks, and similar species. And upon the advice of the arborist, it was suggested that he remove trees that were in close proximity, otherwise they would be competing. So there was some of that going on.
Can I stop you on that? Yes. We ask a follow-up question. Was it illegal for him to remove dead trees on his property?
Our zoning ordinances and the land development regulations, for the most part, I believe, are set up for development applications regarding zoning permits, conditional use permits, subdivision ordinance, subdivision planning standards. And when an application is submitted for one or a combination of those, then we are able to look at standards which include the environmental provisions about protection of trees and whatnot. So this activity took place prior to any submittal.
Let me re-ask. His property is zoned Ag-1. Would ordinarily allow a farmer, an Ag-1 person, to cut down trees, correct?
I would say that's a non-regulated activity. Okay. Until such time a development application is submitted, then we need to look at that.
All right. Thank activity. You.
But with regard to Dayton Parkway, our view of that is that it's a driveway. It was created, I believe, in the 70s, late 70s. It's a 60-foot right-of-way extending from Dayton Avenue all the way back to the west of Mr. Gibbons' property, and it was to allow access to that western portion. But again, this is a four-lot subdivision request. Mr. Gibbons' parcel is 6.5 acres. He cannot resubmit a plat to divide that further under our current standards because he would have to have access to a public or a private road right away.
All right, so that's it for the questions that I had based on where I saw the disconnect between our Planning and Zoning Commission and Planning and Development staff. A couple of the other questions that either I have or I've heard asked, and Emily, I think you mentioned this as part of your presentation, the hammerhead of the end of this new access street. Why is that not a circle? Is that topography? Is that strictly the applicant's decision? How does all that work, and what does a hammerhead road designate that a roundabout circle would?
On a major plat, they really have the option. They can submit a drawing that shows a hammerhead so that you can provide access to the lots, which is what's shown here, and it provides a way to turn around, and that way you're facing the road when you exit onto Dayton, or you can submit something that shows more of a cul-de-sac. So they chose to do a hammerhead.
But you wouldn't build a hammerhead thinking that maybe you're going to extend that road in the future. I mean, is that a thing, or is it once this road's in, it is what it is?
Well, with this site in particular, with the topography, it would be very difficult to extend on the south end, westerly, and then on the north end, he's got a couple of buildings on the north end that would make
it. Well,
you
got Dayton Parkway right there.
Right. I'm talking about the north-south portion of that. To extend that north tip westerly would be pretty difficult with the configuration of the existing accessory buildings.
Okay. So we talked a lot about natural areas. I think you talked about the existing swimming pool, which spills over into part of a natural area. But it looks to me like the lot that's being proposed on the northeast side, I think it's lot one, that seems to be in prairie. And I think there's some tax implications there. Why is that not considered a natural area and for our purposes?
Yeah, it's not referenced on the Ames Urban Fringe Plan as a natural resource area. Our understanding is that a previous landowner prior to Mr. Gibbons acquiring that property planted that material and received a tax benefit, as is Mr. Gibbons. But it's not considered to be a regulated resource. So if that lot is, you know, if this plat is approved and the lot is sold, then the owner could preserve a portion of it or remove all of it.
Okay. He just loses his tax benefit.
That portion of it.
Okay. That's all the questions I had for staff. So my intent here is for us to finish asking questions to staff, for us to bring up the applicant, hear from the applicant, ask questions of the applicant, then open the public hearing. Do you guys have any questions for Gary or Emily?
I asked your department to look into the traffic counts, and thank you for doing that. Do those numbers, as you saw in that three-year period, give you any concern, or what do they say to you?
There's on both roads, there's over 2,300 vehicles. Five accidents over a three-year period isn't too alarming, I would say. It's certainly less than 1% of the total number of traffic, and as Emily mentioned, only one of those involved an injury.
Right. Any more?
I'd like to come back to these, what has happened on the property prior to, okay? Under the Ag 1 and even into now the new R1 designation, where someone stores their lumber, or if they keep repurposed or reclaimed items, what are regulations about that? Do we require them to be kept in a particular appearance? Or
like a log pile? Like a wood? We don't have a specific regulation that addresses that.
So,
other than the aesthetics, we have nothing to address this with.
Right. So, and we don't regulate aesthetics under either one of these designations, correct?
Not with regard to stacking or storing logs.
Okay.
Used for fuel.
Or reclamation of materials that are kept on a property.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Is that all you have?
That's it.
Okay. Anything else, Mark? Good. All right. Thank you, guys. Gibbons and or representative, question for you guys. Hey, please come right up here. So that
you go in there?
Absolutely.
Not that one.
Not that one. No. That one. They'll slide out of the way for you. Start by introducing yourself, please.
My name is Jeff Gibbons. I'm the applicant, lifelong resident of Story County.
And I'm Bob Gibson. You just switch a few letters around in the last name.
Yeah, Bob, that square microphone right in front of you. You can speak
there
right
we go.
That way.
Okay.
Thank you guys for being here today. Feels to me like the board has gotten a really thorough presentation of all the gyrations that we've been through to this point. First thing I'd ask you, is there anything you want to add or note from the presentation, or something that you feel like wasn't addressed during the presentation?
Well, in regards to the tree removal, when I bought the property on contract 4 years ago, and the previous owner showed me pictures of Dayton Lake, and I fell in love with the property. My intentions were to resurrect Dayton Lake. Talked to the owners, landowners on the south side. They because eventually that water would end up on their property. They expressed no interest in doing that. So, but there's enough slope there that there's still a possibility of a water feature. So I talked to the Natural Resources Office, and Tara Van Wass came out and looked at the property. She referred me to John Garten of the DNR. And they said, as long as you're only building it this big, and it's 18 acre foot, in storage, you don't need a permit. And so in my mind, I'm saying I can still build a water feature. So if you look at the what I've taken out, I took out the trees where the water was going to be. I hauled those trees up because I wanted to reclaim those resources, and that's part of the reason why I have a sawmill. And so if you look at what's happening, for example, this whole area used to be what's called oak savanna. And oak savanna is, we want to preserve the oaks and basically grasses underneath. We were going to get rid of the honeysuckle, mulberry, and all those invasive trees. And so that's what I'm doing is very similar to the restoration project that's happening on Ada Hayden, one of the crown jewels of the property. So I'm not taking out. So to answer that question, I felt like I was within my rights to build a water feature. Took out the trees where the water feature was going to be, and I haven't finished that because if you look at this project, every tree, every log, every branch I've touched. It's not like I ordered some contractor out there. This has been a work in progress. So, and I love doing it. But that's to answer the question in one of the objections about the trees. It was because I want to put back some sort of water feature down below. And as I read the explanation, there's no permitting as it stands today. I guess if I want to build a water feature, I'm not exactly who I should be talking to, because I talked to the DNR. And
you brought an arborist in. What did he tell you as far as the tree removal? Did he say, it sounds like you're telling his narrative. What did he tell you expressly?
Well, when I brought the arborist in, because what I wanted to do was recreate the oak savanna, so he advised me to take out the underbrush. Mm-hmm. The oaks are going to be there for 150 years. The other trees are going to grow up, be invasive. They're competing for the nutrients, and they're not long-term trees.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Gibbons or Bob?
Well, I think from the submissions of the application, the iterations that you see coming from planning and zoning, the follow-ups, and I think once again, Jerry and Emily did a pretty good.
They did.
And we'll research.
I have one question. So the name that, as I understand it right now, we're talking about Dayton Park Circle on this proposed access road. And there's at least we got Dayton Road, you got Dayton Parkway. I've heard a couple concerns that maybe that's going to create confusion with addressing out there. Talk to me about the name of that road, and maybe Jerry, that you weigh in. Do we have any say over a name of a road? Dayton Park Circle, I think, is what's proposed, right?
Right. I would like to have Dayton a part of this road in some fashion, because what I'm trying to do is in some way continue the legacy of what A.L. Dayton started 100 years ago. In regards to confusing, if the emergency services says, no, that's too confusing, then we'll come up with some other name. But it doesn't have to be Dayton Park Circle, but I want it to be Dayton something,
okay,
because that's what it should be.
I'd
like to follow up directly on the naming. Once again, I'd like to make sure that I understand this correctly. Dayton Parkway is not a parkway at all. It is a private drive. So are we within our rights to ask that sign come down to prevent confusion?
That's a question we have to look into.
The legal? Okay. Because I understand it's on private property.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. And Laura, I'll just say this, and this is not specifically about Dayton Parkway, mm-hmm. I made a request of Gary and Darren Moon, our county engineer, to start to dig into all of our regulations on these private roads. This is not the only road, the only private drive that we have in the county with this issue. Mm-hmm. We need more clarity there.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you on that. I just want to say, I, for the record, I was invited out and went out to view the property physically. So some of the reasons I guess I'm not asking a lot of questions today is having already received them from Mr. Gibbons, and I believe many of you two were there out there at some point too or whatever. But so some of it is already, the background has been explained to me. So
yeah,
I apologize if I'm not asking the right questions for the record for clarity, I guess, because some of them I've already heard.
Absolutely, and Laura, I really appreciate that. And as you know, we've all been out multiple occasions to meet with Mr. Gibbons. I went out and met with neighbors that we're going to hear from here in a few minutes, just to visit about their concerns. And all I would say is this, and I don't want to belabor this, but it is important to ask the questions. Even if you have the answers, it's important to ask the questions and make sure that we're. This is kind of a unique situation where you have Planning and Zoning Commission going one way, which is diametrically opposed to where staff was, and it's our job to get to the bottom of it and figure out what's appropriate moving forward. So if you don't have any other questions of them, I'll let them go and we'll open the public hearing.
I don't.
Okay.
Can I have a few more thoughts here? Just a couple things. Dayton Parkway, the existing private drive, a couple things about that. With this new arrangement, there's going to be one less house using that. It'll be Jeff's house because he's going to access it now from the new street. So there's actually going to be less traffic, one house worth, right, on that parkway. Regarding traffic, typically what's figured in for a single-family resident, I think, is about 10 vehicle trips per day. Is that, Darren? That's about right. So this development would potentially add 30 vehicle trips per day onto Dayton Avenue, which is only a just over 1% increase, but really only puts it back to, I think, that was a 1999 figure. So it's negligible impact traffic-wise as well. All the new homes are obviously to the east along Dayton. From the Kellys to the south, it's 400 feet minimum from wherever a house would be built to their house, and that's all trees in between. And it's pretty much the same for the Dolls to the west. It's at least 400 feet from where that house would be built and a lot of trees. So my point there is that it's not going to be affecting their privacy at all. There's no effect on any of their woodlands or anything whatsoever. There's going to be very little effect on the woodlands on Jeff's property. You know, a tree or two might have to go to fit in a house. And regarding that area around the pool, which the pool does clip that designated natural area, which is a broad stroke painting on a large scale map. But whether a house gets built in that footprint or not, that area is going to get cleaned up and there's going to be vegetation removed as that pool and all that concrete's removed and regraded and so on. And there's a very common concern with every development about how is drainage affected and where water goes. All of Jeff's property drains down to that area. And where these new houses are going to go, they're going to drain directly into that pond if it gets built and not affect any properties at all downstream. And overall, just some rough estimates for what these three new houses, there's going to be maybe like a 6% increase in impervious coverage. But that's why we're providing the check dams down that swale and then the rain gardens to help slow and capture some of that rainwater. So those are my additions.
Can you remind me, Mr. Gibson, what your role is in this?
Oh, I'm with Civil Design Advantage, the engineering firm.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
All right, so with that, we will now open the public hearing and ask if there is anyone who would like to address the Board of Supervisors on this matter. This is Ordinance 263 and Resolution 1835. And pretty informal, just come on up. You're going to start by introducing yourself and giving your address and then share your comments. Good morning.
Good morning. Jerry Sloan, 5105 North Dayton Avenue. I'm about an eighth of a mile. My home is about an eighth mile south of this property. Just a beginning here, I think part of the problem is there's been very poor communication on this from the landowner with the neighbors. And just a sit-down meeting, this is what we're planning on doing. We'd like to talk with you about it, so it won't come as a surprise, and what are kind of an outline of what was going to happen, and that just never occurred until all of a sudden lots of things began emerging. Now, I met with Jeff on three occasions regarding getting consent to impound part of his proposed lake on our property, and I listened and we discussed it and felt like it wasn't something we wanted to participate in. And I told him that the primary reason we didn't want that was we didn't want to see his property turn into a development and increase the number of homes in that area. And then it went away. But during this whole time, all of this removal of trees and stuff was taking place. And believe me, it wasn't all junk dead trees. And I won't say any more about that because I know you have no regulations concerning that. I think it's part of the communication lack that this just further enhanced the distrust in between what he was doing and what we thought he was doing. But having said that, I think there's a couple about things about this, that this proposal in terms of these standards for approval, the two main things I would like to point out, some things that I believe would say that this does not meet the standards for approval. One of which has to do with being compatible with surrounding land uses and patterns of development patterns. These are 1 acre lots or slightly more or less, those that he's proposing to either have homes on or that already have a home. Now, the one back lot apparently can't be built on. And it is the largest piece of this property that will be remaining. Excuse me, I have allergies and it's not real good for me right now. So within his lots range from just 1.1 acre to 1.7 where the existing home is. And the average lot size for the homes and properties immediately surrounding him, there's about 10 of them, 10 properties or homes. The average size is 10.5 acres. Then if you go out to the next quarter mile increment, diameters, area, the average lot size is 8.303 acres. And, no, excuse me, that's incorrect. It's 6.28 acres is the average size in the quarter mile area.
Not including Hickory Grove.
Well, Hickory Grove, by the way, is one single lot.
Right, but there's 35 acres.
That's 10.67 acres. And I would argue that that thing is a non-conforming. It would never be approved today and shouldn't be used as a standard how we approve future development in that area. To me, we ought to be discussing what we can do to maybe improve that situation rather than how do we use that as a guideline for future planning. My statement on this is that the pattern of development is not for urban-type concentrated lots. It's for more rural, open development with larger lot sizes. These sorts of things are commonly regulated in urban and other rural settings about minimum lot sizes because they do impact property values of adjacent properties and have a potential detrimental impact on them. In fact, one of the members of the Planning and Zoning Commission and others may have chimed in, is that why should we approve a development that just meets the most minimal standards? And this was in response to this lot size that he heard from folks in the audience that day. Is that basically they were approving slightly over 1 acre lots in an area that was clearly not, the pattern of development was clearly not in that direction. So that was my one concern with the applicant not meeting the standards for approval. And the other one has to do with the natural areas. Now, looking at Story County Code 8805, in paragraph 2, protection of natural vegetation cover as defined in section 8508 of the Code of Story County. 8508, paragraph 156D, indicates that woodlands and, quote, native prairie areas are included in natural vegetation cover. And the area being developed, that front part, the most eastern part of this, where the lots actually are, is a 2 acre area that has Just a second here. I've got a lot of paper here. I don't want to get myself confused. There's a process. There's a little bit of discussion about that this was for tax purposes, had been exempt from taxation. And this is in accordance with a state law that allows for these areas to be exempted from taxation, as it is for forested areas, etc. But the process to get this exemption is explicitly clear. The DNR has to certify that this property is a natural prairie area, open prairie area that has not been cultivated. Now, it can be a prairie area that has been improved, but it has to have an underlying standard that it is a natural, previously uncultivated area. And they certify that through a process with the DNR. And there's a whole certification process that has to take place, and that is step one. Then that's submitted to the county, and then they look at it and see if it's approved. So I am arguing that has been designated. It isn't somebody's subjective opinion that this is a natural prairie area. And it is included in the code as a protected natural area. Therefore, this needs to be taken into consideration in the approval process. And because it is stipulated in the code that natural native prairie areas are included. And then if you were to go back to the 15% destruction of natural prairie or of natural areas as part of your developmental standards, this is a 2-acre area, which is 87,120 square feet. Well, the roadway alone has 17,725 square feet in it, which already exceeds the 15% destruction standard. Then if you add on to that three 1,500 square foot houses, that's an additional 4,500. And if you have an attached garage, it's roughly 550 square feet. That's another 1,600 square feet. And then if you add just the driveway to get to the garage, I allowed another 500 square feet there. So you're up to 25,000 square feet of an 87,000 square foot area, which far exceeds the 15% standard for destruction of natural areas. And this doesn't even include the site prep and yard areas and everything else that would cut into this 2-acre patch of certified native Iowa prairie. And this was, I hadn't looked into these regulations at the Planning and Zoning Commission, so I didn't have all this detail at that time. I just knew that that was a natural area that the previous owners had improved, but it's been there forever. So in summary, this rezoning and proposed development request should not be approved as it runs contrary to the county planning goals, priorities, and standards in some of the document as it relates to standards for protecting natural areas, and then it also, because it doesn't conform with that, it doesn't conform with the regulations and standards in the development code.
Thank you. Yeah. Go ahead, Laura.
I have a couple of questions.
Yes.
The first one is, anybody chime in, who knows? Was Hickory Grove there, the Hickory Grove Mobile Home Park first, before people began subdividing to build big homes?
Oh, it's,
It's been there a long time, right? Okay.
Yeah, it's been. I've been there.
So just want to make sure that it was the housing subdivisions that moved in on Hickory Grove rather than the other way around. Okay, second of all, question about your certification, the DNR certification that you brought up here. Now, DNI certified to get a tax credit. But does anybody know if once that certification is given, if that property has to stay, you know, per some kind of law, or is it just if you choose to take it out?
I don't believe so. I don't believe it does.
Okay,
so I think that knowing, though, that that exists the way it is, it might be expeditious to just, but they currently have it under. It's currently,
I understand.
It's currently in that designation.
But it can flow in and out, though. As opposed to...
No, it can't flow in. But it can never... To meet this qualification, it's not like a piece of CRP ground.
Okay.
There's an annual recertification process for this program. So each year, the property owner has to apply.
But the certification done by the DNR is a one-time thing.
I'm not sure on that.
It's up front before you can even get through the door.
Once it's in, it doesn't automatically need to stay in.
Right.
That's my real question. It doesn't have to stay there. I understand it has to be pretty much virgin ground and it's certified.
But remember, it is virgin ground.
Right now.
And we're potentially participating in the destruction of native prairie.
Well, I would say historically, it wasn't. Whatever it was, when this facility came out of the ground, it changed. So what it has become is what we see today. So I suspect if you take into account that...
I have photos that go back to the 1920s, and it's not, there's no buildings in that area.
Well, we had a park that was placed there. We see remnants of it. You have but to walk and see it. And I suspect, and speaking of aerial maps, I did, as through the course of figuring out what we have before us here, had Jerry's department give us some aerial maps,
sure,
in there just to speak of what that neighborhood had become prior to, reflecting on the decades past. I don't think there was a home that was constructed out there that did not take out old growth and affect property in the manner that you were speaking to.
The photo that Jeff has too that shows it in the heyday when it was that park, I think the drive actually went through that area.
But yeah, it is today what it is.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. It has been certified what it is, and that being a piece of property that has never been developed or has never been used as cropland. It's a pretty rare commodity in our neighborhood, and it is. It is what it is. And granted, you can take it in and out, but I think that the board, the supervisor participating in the wanton destruction of a native area is something that needs to be seriously considered.
And I appreciate it. And while it is really important that it is what it is, it's also important what it's not. And it is not in a designated natural area, protected area. It is not something that legislatively any governmental entity can say to a property owner, you don't have the right to go mow that down. And so I'm with you. We need to consider it, but we also need to consider what it's not. And really appreciate your comments today. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, my final question.
Oh, sorry.
I have one more. The 15% of our own regulations that say no more than 15%, the 87,000 square feet you talked about, and that covered what, the 2 acres?
The 2 acre area.
Okay.
Because that's kind of a distinct area.
Uh huh.
And then you've got another 6 acres of woodlands on that property.
So I'm going to go really back to the staff. I appreciate you pointing this out. How do we calculate our 15%?
Based on the entire parcel, the entire 10 acre area.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Good.
Thanks for the comment.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Who else?
I'm going to go next because I have some kind of tag on to what he said.
Super.
I brought hands up.
And it's still morning, Lisa. Start by introducing yourself. Don't talk to us until you get over there at the microphone and start by introducing yourself. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Lisa Lorenzen.
I live at 2001 Dayton Parkway, just on the north side of this. First of all, again, thank you to Rick for coming out and talking to the neighborhood. I think we all greatly appreciated that. And also my impromptu conversation with Supervisor Chirkwood.
Yes, it was impromptu.
Went to the wrong house.
Went to the wrong house.
That happened. What I want to start this with is just a reminder that you guys are not required to approve something because it meets minimum standards. Okay? If you were required to approve things that met minimum standards, we wouldn't need you, because anything that met minimum standards would just automatically get approved. So with that in mind, you know, what I want to do and what Jerry just tried to do is we want to convince you it doesn't meet minimum standards. However, in case you disagree with us, I just have a few things I want you to consider if you do approve it. And I think Rick has pretty much mentioned these. There's an easement on the northeast side, northeast part of the property that's along the existing Dayton Parkway. And I would ask you to consider not approving that, as it really isn't relevant to the current rezoning and subdivision. The second thing is that whole Dayton, the name Dayton Park Circle. And Jeff, I get why you want to name it that, and I fully appreciate that. But there already is confusion with Dayton Parkway. In fact, your own county staff did not get the first notice to our house correctly because they put Dayton Avenue, not Dayton Parkway. So we've already got Dayton Avenue, Dayton Parkway. We had Dayton Circle, or Dayton Park Circle, or whatever. There's too many Daytons there already. So one way or another, that will cause confusion. It will cause where we have a lot of turnaround traffic in our area because people go down that thinking it's the wrong road. So just consider the naming issue. I don't know if you have any influence on that or not. And of course, as we've mentioned, we would all prefer a cul-de-sac versus a hammerhead, even though legally there's no difference. It would give the neighbors comfort that maybe we don't have to spend the next 10 years continuing to come to these meetings as in opposition of continued development. So consider that if you decide to approve it, please. The minimum standards, I'm going to bring up four things there why we think it doesn't meet minimum standards. And I think Jerry did a good job on some of the, on mentioning these. My first point is we keep bringing up that the swimming pool abuts into that natural area. So on my second page, what I did is I just kind of drew a red line that shows the hatch area is the natural area. And I drew the red line, and everybody says, well, we'll make an exception for that. So already you're saying it doesn't meet minimum standards, but you'll make an exception for that because the unnatural object is in the natural area. And if you're going to do that, I would say, you know, looking at that hash mark natural area, it's a randomly drawn line. The natural area isn't a straight line. And if you're going to adjust for unnatural objects in the natural area, then on the third page, shouldn't you also take into account the true boundaries of the natural area? And the one I drew was kind of random. I didn't realize that the lot lines followed the contours. So you can see mine's not perfect either. I think you could draw 37 different versions of this on there. But any way you would redraw those natural boundaries, they would actually intrude more into that lot that has the swimming pool as opposed to intruding less into that lot. And that's really the lot that has, you know, brought the most questions as to whether it meets the minimum standards. So, you know, please consider that when you think about the natural area. If you're going to make an exception in one direction, think about making that exception in the other direction. That only seems reasonable.
Right. Can I go there?
Yeah.
And so I think what you're calling a potential exception, I'm not sure we view that the same way. And, Jerry, I'd ask you to address this. So that is a... it is a very generic line, as you said.
Yeah.
Right? It's a very generic line, and the reality is our regulations there don't precisely say there will be no activity. It simply says anything you take out, you have to replace.
Okay.
Jerry, do you want to address that at all?
Right. I would just add that the lot that has that pool is lot 3, and if you're interested, I don't have a crystal ball, but if you're interested in that lot, you're probably going to face your house north and then take advantage of the view for a deck or a patio so that the the footprint of that house is going to be probably more east-west oriented, and so it's going to likely be out of that natural resource area to take advantage of that.
Thank you. Didn't mean to interrupt, Lisa.
No, that's fine. And I think our point would be, we, as a neighborhood, I think we collectively think two lots make sense. I don't, you know, we're here obviously opposing the whole thing, but if you take it steps further, I mean, we would love to convince you no development at all. If we can't convince you that of that, would you consider two lots instead of three? Then to tag on again to what Jerry brought up with the native prairie, the property card has been attached on the fifth page. I'll get back to that fourth one in a second, where there is a forest reserve and the slough bill is the prairie. And then the back page shows all of the years that those forest reserves and the tax benefit that's been received. And I can see that those things can be taken in and out, but right now they're in. So right now, the landowner says they're a natural area because he's getting tax benefit from it. And I would just argue that you need to let that resolve itself before you can rezone. Let them not apply next year, take it out of the natural area, and then come back for the rezone. Because the DNR thinks it's a natural area, the landowner thinks it's a natural area, and it just seems strange that Story County can come in and say, well, it's not really a natural area, you can rezone it. So just something for you to consider there. The picture on page 4, the point that goes along with Jerry's again is that the hatched area, that's the mine, where the mine is, my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, you can't build houses on that. You can't do residential on top of that agricultural mining area. And if that's true, what that really means is what you decide for this property is kind of like the last thing for our area. It's not like there's going to be a lot more development there. And so, again, when you look at that, Jerry's assessment that 2 acres is kind of the minimum, maybe 1.5 to 2, somewhere in there, for this area, to come in and say, nope, three one-acre lots are just fine. That is changing the character of the neighborhood. It's not in keeping with even what will happen in the future, because you can't build on that area down there, and most of the area to the north is already developed. So one more thing for you to consider. The last thing I want you to consider is, the sawmill. My reading of this is the sawmill is zoned agricultural, and the use of the sawmill in producing lumber is actually considered an industrial use from what I could read in your regulations, which is not allowed in agricultural zone area. And also, the cutting down of trees and creating lumber constitutes an agricultural use. And if the land is in agricultural use, again, it's not a you can't rezone forever, but there has to be a time period of when you're not using that. And while Jeff Gibbons has contended that he uses this for hobby purposes, it's our understanding that he has a partner in the sawmill and may have bought the sawmill with someone else, but even if he didn't buy it with someone else, he has a partner, Gary Goodman, that uses the sawmill frequently, and Gary has a Goodman Construction Services business. So Gary can't argue that he uses it for hobby purposes at his business. So when you go back to your minimum standards, I think any one of these things alone is not enough for you to say no, and I get that. Any one of these things are kind of like, but I think when you stack them on top of each other, and you stack the natural area on top of the prairie, on top of the use of the sawmill, is it really zoned for what it's being used for? Can you argue it's been used for agricultural purposes? I think layering them all on top of each other, we hope that you can get to the point where maybe today isn't the right time to rezone this and allow the subdivision. But thank you for considering my comments.
Absolutely, Lisa. Thank you for your diligence and your comments. And appreciate the food for thought.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to address? Kurt, we're going to come to you next. I hope, and it just gets, your schedule gets tough, I sure understand.
All right. My name is Scott Dahl, also at 2001 Dayton Parkway. Lisa's my wife. And I'm not going to reiterate a lot of what she and Jerry have already talked about. But, you know, really a lot of what our concern is that what will this development lead to? I mean, we know that Jeff's intent has always been to develop the land all the way along Dayton Parkway. And, you know, in spite of his insistence when we ask him, you know, face to face, that that is not his intent, and you know, that's, you know, an integrity issue that, you know, he has to deal with on his own. But I think that from our standpoint, you know, right now the regulations do not say that he cannot expand any subdivision. That, you know, that caveat right now is always in there. And so as we look ahead, you know, we're looking not just short-term, but long-term here as well. You know, I find it interesting that when you say you fall in love with a piece of land and, you know, you want to, you know, kind of make that your forever place, the first thing you do is decide, yeah, I'd really love a subdivision in my front yard. You know, so that doesn't really fly with me. And, you know, when you look at, you know, tore out a bunch of trees, but we also planted 70 trees. Well, most of those trees are in the area that are going to be torn out again if the subdivision goes in. And, you know, they're all white pines that aren't, you know, necessarily in keeping with that area as well. And we talked a lot about the feel of the area as well in the neighborhood. It's hard to separate our neighborhood, or what we consider our neighborhood, with maybe what the legal description of a neighborhood is, which I believe you consider a quarter mile around the area. But I mean, you know, our little area is really surrounded completely by a ravine, so it is kind of a standalone property. And yeah, I'm always of the opinion that just because maybe you meet the minimum standards and can do something doesn't necessarily mean that you should. Now, I don't know why, when, you know, you see all the neighbor support that are opposed to this project, well, why would you would want to move forward with the project to begin with, unless it's just about, you know, making money off of the project. So, you know, I mean, we certainly have concerns about all that, but we also have concerns about, you know, what we've already seen. You know, the drainage ditch along part of Dayton Parkway was removed by Jeff. You know, the second access road was added, again, without consultation or, you know, permission of any of the other users of Dayton Parkway. And, you know, I think that just kind of goes towards really what our expectations are moving forward. You know, certainly we have a trust issue that, you know, that just doing the minimum amount will lead to, well, maybe they didn't say we couldn't do this, so we're going to do it, even though it might have a negative impact on the other property owners around. And so our concern may not necessarily be about just what's proposed today, but again, what's proposed in the future.